On a moonless April night in 1912, the Titanic struck an iceberg and sank in the frigid North Atlantic. 1,500 people perished, including the husbands of 80 of the women on board. Almost all the women boarded the lifeboats only under the direct orders of their husbands or other men of authority. Yet the surviving widows soon found themselves maligned as selfish opportunists, while the three women who refused to abandon their husbands were held up as paragons of virtue. I'm Sarah McConnell. On today's With Good Reason, Longwood University historian Deborah Welch discusses the sinking of the Titanic and the harsh newspaper coverage of those women who dared to survive. Immediately after the Titanic disaster of 1912, Americans began heaping adulation on the memories of the truly heroic men who had stepped back in order that women and children might be saved. But less well known today is that some quarters also turned on the widows of the men who had gone down with the ship and castigated the women for surviving. My guest today is Longwood University history professor Deborah Welch. So much has been written on the sinking of the Titanic, but you've been gripped by one aspect in particular, and that is this blame that certain elements of society seem to have directed at the widows who survived while their husbands went down with the ship. Was there, in fact, blame?
There was an enormous amount of blame. Within 3 days of the sinking of that ship on April 15th, 1912, the Denver Post ran as its headline, "Women Must Explain Why They Abandoned Their Mates in Death." That was the headline, and that was only 3 days after the ship went down. You have to remember, this was an enormous shock to the world, and for 2 days, no one could get any information. All they really had to work with were Titanic distress calls. The Titanic actually sent off an SOS that night. That was the new distress call. They were the first ship to ever try it. A lot of ships got that distress call, but they didn't quite understand. You have to remember, the Titanic was the safest ship afloat. And so the Titanic was getting a lot of weird messages in return. Okay, we're steaming toward you. Are you heading south toward us? And the radio operator simply responded, "We're putting women and children into the lifeboats," which would end all discussion. You know, we're sinking. There were 80 widows that night, 711 survivors.
Just a few dozen men who survived?
Oh, no. Quite a few of the first-class men did survive. In fact, that becomes the shock, one of the shocks of the Titanic, that far more first-class men survived than did third-class children.
Now, the third-class people died because they died on impact and from drowning, or because they were denied access to the scarce lifeboat seats?
There were no lifeboat seats available by the time the majority of them got to the boat deck. They were gone. The lifeboats were long gone.
So people didn't go running through the ship saying, "We're sinking, we're sinking."
Oh, God, no.
Well, when people were putting others on lifeboats, they didn't go through the ship saying...
Oh, yes. Then the stewards began hammering on doors in first class, making sure everyone was out, going through second class, and as best they could, organizing the steerage passengers. But you have to remember, so many of them did not speak English. They saw people scurrying. They wanted to run, too. Many of them wanted to make sure they had their belongings with them, everything they owned in the world they had on that ship. A lot of them were traveling with small children. They were trying to get their children dressed.
To be clear about the lifeboats, there weren't enough lifeboats for the 2,000-plus passengers on board.
The Titanic carried 16 lifeboats plus 4 collapsible boats. 16 boats was all that was required by British maritime law.
How many people would have fit on these lifeboats?
They could have perhaps saved half of the people on board. The Titanic, thank God, was not traveling at full capacity that night.
Why weren't the lifeboats, as they were lowered into the water, filled? Some of the seats were empty.
Oh, a lot of the seats were empty. The first boats that left, 6, 7, and 8, only had 28 passengers apiece. Now, they had been tested by the builders, Harland and Wolff, in Belfast, to carry 68 people and still lowered safely in the davits.
So some people were afraid to get in, thought they would survive if they stayed on the ship, might die if they went into the boat.
They didn't understand that the ship was actually sinking. There was no sensation. And you have to remember what a still night it was. It felt like a rock in the water.
So given that scenario, why did so many people get on the boats and why did husbands say, "Get on"?
The panic grew as the night wore on. When they first started lowering those lifeboats, women did not want to get in.
Let me go back to what inspired you to become such an expert in this area. It was actually watching a TV news program not so many years ago.
Yeah, the first thing offended me was an NBC Dateline show. And there was a representative there from the British Titanic Society UK who was explaining why the women would not allow the sailors in those half-filled lifeboats to return and pick up survivors in the water. And he essentially says they persuaded themselves that that wasn't their husbands, that wasn't anyone they knew screaming in the water, those weren't children of their friends. That just didn't ring true. If you hear a child crying, you don't stop and ask whose child is it? Drowning. The second thing then was a dateline. They were doing one of their polls, asking their audience members, if you had been on board that night, would you have wanted your wife to leave you?
Why did that bother you?
Because it was a dumb question to ask. They weren't there. How could you possibly make a judgment if you weren't there? The third thing was a photograph I found taken by passengers on the Carpathia. The Carpathia picked up those lifeboats and their passengers after dawn. The photograph, however, I remember there were five women standing there at the railing. Those women knew. They knew they were widows. Three of them were looking out at sea. Two of them turned around, and one of them had a look in her eyes of, how dare you photograph us? How dare you pry at this moment? The night before, they had been forced away from their husbands, and now they were being forced to leave them again, to leave graves that they could never revisit. It was horrifying. Those women's eyes convinced me to look into this a bit further.
Because you thought the injustice was what?
That women were being blamed for leaving their husbands as if they had made that choice. That is instantly the line the newspaper seized upon.
You think generally, when husbands and wives were aboard, and the husband said, get in the boat, the women felt and did what?
They resisted for as long as they could. It took so long before people really began to realize what kind of trouble they were in. This was the safest ship afloat in 1912. They just could not believe it would actually sink.
So part of the blame is not just that the women got on the boats. The worst blame came from, did the boats turn around and save those who ended up in sea?
Exactly. Those half-filled lifeboats. Jack Thayer's memoir was the most condemning. I mean, he says that those half-filled lifeboats only a few hundred yards away, how could any human being fail to heed those cries?
Which you don't dispute. You think,
not
how
at
could
all.
They not have turned back?
Not at all. No, you have to understand the Titanic broke. Now, once the stern goes down, then you have thousands of people in the water. They could not have gone back at that point. They would have been swamped. But they had hours before that they could have gone back and gotten more passengers on those boats.
So you're saying the women who got on the boats also were following an orderly process, but didn't necessarily know their husbands weren't going to be right behind them.
Their husbands promised them they would be right behind them. They promised them they would take another boat.
Do you think the husbands thought they would take another boat?
I think initially, in the beginning, they did. I think toward the end, they obviously realized they were lying. And they were very good liars. I'm not disputing the heroism shown that night. We do have survivor testimony from both men and women of what went on that night and the extraordinary lengths those men went to force their wives into the boats. A lot of the first women who left because with children. And these women, seeing themselves in half-filled lifeboats, assumed there must be room for their husbands in another boat. And the ship seemed so steady out there. When the bow does begin to seriously list, and the stern is actually beginning to rise up out of the ocean, for the first time they realized. And that's when they begged to go back. And we have survivor testimony not only from the women, but from male passengers in those boats as well.
That is when women in the lifeboat said, row
yes,
back.
Yes, help him, help them. We've got to go back, we've got to go back.
Now, who were they talking to?
The crewmen who from the Titanic who were put in charge of those boats.
How many crewmen were there on each boat?
There were about as many crewmen in those boats as there were passengers. That is one of the things that the Titanic crew is going to have to find so very difficult to explain, why so many of them were alive when 1,523 people were dead. They refused to go back. And we have testimony, again, not just from women trying to justify themselves, but from men, of the women's pleas and these crewmen saying, shut up, be happy, you have your own lives, saying some quite horrible things. We can't go back for a bunch of stiffs. But for a lot of reasons, society honed in on these first-class widows. Nobody blamed the third-class women and children who survived, and there were some. Certainly no one blamed the second-class women. When the Carpathia docked in New York, no one was allowed off board unless there was someone to meet them there on the docks in New York. That meant that all those reporters saw, and there were reporters from every newspaper waiting, were those first-class women coming off the boats.
So far, they're not blaming. They just want to say, what do you know? What did you see? What was it like? How did you feel? Nobody was swarming around them to blame them.
Oh, no, not initially. But the tide does turn very quickly. I remind you of that headline in the Denver papers calling upon these women to justify themselves only 3 days after the sinking. In many ways, the women bring this on themselves because the first thing they're overheard saying to family is assuring them how bravely their husbands had died. But there were other women who had not left their husbands, who did talk to reporters. And some of the things they said were indeed quite crushing.
Such as?
There was a Mrs. Churchill Candee of Washington who gave an interview to the New York Times. And I quote, all the women were saved except those who preferred to remain with their husbands. Mrs. Strauss was one of these.
That doesn't seem so damaging.
Mm. A lot of organizations joined in very quickly to add to the snowball of condemnation, which is going to follow these widows. The impetus for that really comes from the story of Isidore and Ida Strauss, the elderly couple who were aboard the Titanic. Mrs. Strauss was offered a seat in the lifeboat. Someone offered Mr. Strauss one as well, saying, an elderly gentleman like you. Well, that offended male pride, and he
sealed his fate.
He stepped back, and then Mrs. Strauss got out of the lifeboat. She made sure her maid stayed in it, but she got out, and what she said to her husband has been reported in a variety of ways, but essentially it comes down to, we've lived together, we will die together. Mr. and Mrs. Strauss, co-founders of Macy's, an enormously wealthy couple, also a Jewish couple. America was at the height of anti-Semitism in 1912. Every Jewish organization in the country made sure that the Strauss story was headlined in every newspaper. Christian ministers in the following Sunday in their sermons picked up on the story of Mrs. Strauss. And what comes across in all of these sermons is that these women had a choice, that they had made a choice to leave their husbands.
Initially, that you think they weren't blamed, they were simply, by silent contrast, those who lived while heroes were
yes.
praised.
They were damned on all sides, you have to understand. I mean, the conservative ministers, for leaving their husbands and being alive. The suffragists got into this.
What did they say? The women's movement people?
Well, it started in England, actually, with Sylvia Pankhurst saying that, no, that heroism had nothing to do with it, that women and children first at sea was quite normal practice, and women wanted equal treatment along with men. One of her colleagues wrote in a London paper, and I quote, a suffragist would have preferred to meet her fate alongside her husband. I would 1,000 times rather have gone down with the ship under similar circumstances, end quote. The cruelty of that was perpetuated in the investigations. The people called to testify were almost entirely Titanic crew members. Senator Smith, William Alden Smith of Michigan, who headed the Senate inquiry, he had them in his sights from the moment he found out that the director of the White Star Line, J. Bruce Ismay, had survived. He wanted his head on a platter. So Smith turned to those lifeboats. Why were those lifeboats half filled? Why did you not go back and save more people? The women stopped us. He hammered away at every Titanic crewman and the same story. We wanted to go back. The women in the boats would not allow it.
Now, if that is not true, why didn't the women say balderdash?
You have to remember these committee hearings started before the Carpathia even arrived in New York. These women were still stunned. Some of them were still even searching hospitals looking for their husbands. They thought perhaps they had been picked up by the Parisian or the Burma or the Californian, one of the other ships that had shown up. I do have the testimony of men survivors who were in those boats as well, who supported the women's stories, that they were the ones who wanted to go back, and it was the crewmen who prevented them.
And your point is the crewmen had everything to lose, to look in the eyes of the world as though they were that callous?
They didn't so much fear what the United States Senate could do to them. They very much feared what was going to happen when they got back to England.
Why?
Oh, the British Board of Trade. Oh, my goodness.
You don't think it was just manly resolve to not admit that they wouldn't go back and get survivors?
I'm not sure how manly. Who would want to admit that they had done that? That's a simple human impulse, not to be the one to get the blame. But the fact remains, they were the crew. These passengers were their responsibility. They let them die.
So why didn't the women defend them, their reputations? Why didn't they simply say, not true? We desperately implored them to turn the boats around.
As I say, I think they had their hands full. Their relatives were keeping the newspapers away from them of what was going on in the United States Senate hearings. I think there was survival guilt that kicks in. Everyone was still very much caught up in the example of how widows should conduct themselves that had been laid down by Queen Victoria.
What was that?
You retreat. You make no public appearances. You devote yourself to your husband's memory. That is your role in life. My husband promised to follow in another boat. That appears in all their testimony. I was forced. And then the line that I find over and over again, I did not choose to leave. Choose. One widow I remember that she looked in his eyes and said, are you being honest with me? And he looked right back and said, yes, I am. I will follow in another boat. And she said he had never lied to me. I had no reason not to believe him.
Did any of them describe fear on the part of their husbands?
No. Now, Mrs. Jacques Futrell at the end did describe the way he finally got her in a boat, telling her that he would have a better chance of survival if he didn't have to look after her, if he was on his own. That made sense to her. He was stronger. He could swim better. That's the only way he got her into that boat.
I've only seen two Titanic movies. Can you guess which ones they are?
A Night to Remember and the James Cameron movie.
Which one do you think I liked best?
I'm hoping A Night to Remember.
It was.
Yeah.
It was the men dressed up, lining the rails as the ship is going down and singing, Nearer My God to Thee.
Actually, there's some debate that was the last song the band played. The band did stay on deck and played Ragtime until finally they broke either into Nearer My God to Thee or to another English hymn.
And did the men sing?
No. The stern started coming out of the water. There was an incredible scramble away from the ocean. It seemed as though a giant wave was coming over the bow of the Titanic, and they were fleeing the water. No one could have survived more than 30 minutes. The water was 28 degrees that night. No one had a chance to drown. They froze to death. After it, the din did begin to die down. They did combine people into one of the lifeboats and take another lifeboat back to see who they could save. But they only picked up four survivors, one of whom died within the hour.
There's an exhibit actually underway now in Virginia regarding the Titanic. What do you think of that?
I'm afraid I take the view of Robert Ballard that the Titanic is a gravesite and should not be disturbed. Robert Ballard's favorite analogy is, do you want to see belt buckles off the Arizona? No, we will not. But I gave that question to a class recently, and it didn't bother them, and that alarms me. It's one of the drawbacks, I think, of the Anglo world's determination to think in linear time, that yesterday, today, tomorrow. I think if they would adopt an American Indian perspective of thinking in terms of a circle, that something happened is more important than when it happened, then there would be greater sensitivity to leaving these sites alone.
Deborah, thank you for sharing your insights on With Good Reason.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Deborah Welsh is a professor of history at Longwood University and has written an analysis of the treatment of the surviving Titanic widows entitled Only the Dead Were Brave.